Today on 50 Fires, my conversation with Coach Scott Drew, head coach of men's basketball at Baylor, winners of the NCAA championship in 2021.
The best schools know what's needed because now you can keep your program going in the direction it needs to and not have to worry about the outside noise or need the outside noise.
Coach Drew and I talk about the financial pressure that he and his players face today and the importance of mentoring his players both on and off the court.
One thing we try to do with our players, we'll start every practice with, we'll have a different person say one thing they're grateful for. And if you're grateful, it's hard to be upset and jealous.
That's coming up today on 50 Fires.
Blind Nil Audio.
Greetings, Carl here. After my conversation on 50 Fires with Chip Gaines, which you can go back and listen to now, I asked him who he thought would be an interesting guest, and he immediately recommended Coach Drew, and I'm glad he did. When Coach Scott Drew accepted the head coaching position at Baylor in 2003, the job was arguably one of the worst in all of college sports. Even if you don't follow college sports, the state of the team was pulled straight from the headlines. I don't have time to recap it all here, but believe me when I tell you, the program was in a bad spot. But Coach Drew, a man of deep faith, had a confident vision of what the program could be, even in the face of such adversity, and he guided the team to the pinnacle of success. Under his leadership, Baylor made its first NCAA tournament appearance in almost 20 years in 2008. And at the 2021 National Championship, Coach Drew led Baylor to its first ever national title, defeating Gonzaga in the final game. As you'll soon hear, Coach Drew is in a unique position to talk about money, but not only from his own experience, but from the vantage point of a coach who takes the success of his players both on and off the court really seriously. I'm Carl Richards, an author, artist, and certified financial planner. And today I'm talking with Coach Scott Drew about money and meaning on 50 Fires. Looks like you've got the court right in the background, huh?
Yeah, so that's our practice court right behind us. That way we can make sure no one's getting hurt down there.
So before we start, I live in Utah. It's been a long time since the Majerus years. So yeah. We had become Gonzaga fans.
Uh-huh.
And that 21 game was so, I mean, it was fantastic. I became huge Baylor fans after that.
Oh, that's awesome. Coach Few is a great man, a good friend of mine. We play pickleball together. He loves to fish. And he just got his 700th win. So he's done a tremendous job in college athletics.
Yeah. So the goal of the show, I don't know what you, and we'll get into this, like what your experience has been with money and conversations about money, but I was always taught sort of money, politics, sex, and religion.
Yeah, don't talk about.
Were things you sort of didn't talk about in polite company. And it
right.
Turns out that all four of those are pretty important things to be able to discuss. We're trying to sort of normalize the idea that we can have conversations about money. I think to start, it would be fun to just back up a bit. Coach, what's your earliest memory of money?
We didn't have much growing up. So my dad was a college coach and Division III small Christian school, NAIA. And I remember one time we wanted to go see a Star Trek movie. And my parents were like, we don't have money to go to Star Trek. So I remember we built nailed some wood and stuff together and sold it to the neighbors. Said, hey, we're trying to go to a movie. We're trying to go to Star Trek. Our family doesn't have money to go to the movie. And so when we came home with the money, our parents about killed us. They said, return all the money. We will go to Star Trek. But in the early days, especially coaching was I think we qualified for food stamps, actually.
Wow.
So we didn't have a lot growing up.
Yeah. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in, my dad is a coach, you move around. So my dad, I was born in Kansas City. Then when I was 1 year old, he coached at Washington State as an assistant coach. Then he went to Baton Rouge in Louisiana, LSU, wow. Coached from 72 to 76. Then back in the day, the NCAA, they allowed you to recruit 24/7. So like the last year he was out, I think he had hotel receipts for 156 nights or something.
Wow.
And my mom tells a story. He came in one night and we thought he was a burglar. And at that point went to a small Christian school where basically that was like our playground. I mean, we'd go to the gym and he'd have practice and we'd get to Goodman Auditorium and at Bethel College. And then we were raised there in Mishawaka, Indiana, right by South Bend in Notre Dame. And then once we got older, then he went to Valparaiso University and coached, but really didn't understand maybe at the time the sacrifice he made, because he was on the track to be a young head Division I coach. And he gave that up so he could spend more time with the family and help raise us, which in hindsight, I couldn't be more appreciative. And you can't ever buy time. So the fact that he would do that meant a lot.
Yeah. How did you know that you didn't have a lot?
And that's a good question, because when you're young, you really don't know name brands or things like that. But I think when you go to friends' houses and their houses had more toys or was bigger than yours, if more cars. I think one of my favorite family stories, we had a car, we call it the Hornet. And I think when we sold it, a guy offered a shotgun for it. It was like $400. But my point being, we had a lot of family love, and really it wasn't until like you'd start visiting friends' houses outside of the neighborhood when you got older. And that was more in junior high, high school days where you really saw, oh, this is a nice neighborhood. We're not in this one.
Yeah. What do you make of that? Because it's really interesting talking to, like, we're similar ages, talking to people from our sort of age cohort. That's a very similar story. And it's very different from like younger now. There's so much comparison.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem to be, I don't know how maybe your kids have experienced it, or maybe even the kids you spend so much time around, the young men you spend so much time around. But what do you make of that idea that like our childhood, it was like, I didn't really know. I mean, there were some things I realized in high school, like you said, like you go to a house and you're like, well, this is a different neighborhood. But there was so much less comparison. And clearly we can point to Instagram for that problem. Yeah. You know,
100%.
But what do you make of that?
Well, I think exactly what you said as far as the comparison game with social media probably is the toughest thing for young people, and probably leads to a lot of anxiety, depression, ungratefulness. In practice, we like to say we get to practice rather than we have to practice. But so often you look at social media and you see somebody has this car and you're like, I want that car. You see this thing and I want that thing. And you become ungrateful for what you have. One thing we try to do with our players, and anything we try to do with our players helps us. And that is, like, we'll start every practice with, we'll have a different person say one thing they're grateful for. And when we say one thing, it might be 3-minute talk. It might be a 10-second talk. But if you're grateful, it's hard to be upset and jealous, because like it's easy with players. You now within name, image, and likeness. I mean, some people, or back in the day, some players would drive nicer cars, and some players get the latest shoes and others don't. And you're like, and shoes is like cash. I mean, how does LeBron get those shoes? No one else gets them.
How do you deal with that now as a coach in a relatively competitive, you know, salaries are generally public and you know, ESPN news. Like, how do you personally deal with this comparison issue? Because it's not like it's cute of us to say like peer pressure is for the kids, you know, like it's not like it goes away as an adult.
Right. No. We're all human. Yeah. So here my brother played in the NBA and was the 16th pick, and he played for 6 years. And what I never understood was, professional athletes were making so much money. Who could be upset with making that much money? And what I found out through him was, it wasn't the money. It was basically the comparison. So if I'm playing and I'm scoring and I'm producing, but yet I'm making half of what someone who isn't, or my team's winning and his team's losing and my numbers are better. And like, so it was never the amount of money. It was more the competitive part of it. And I think for coaches, I mean, if you're not competitive, you're probably not successful in sports. So I don't think it's the dollar figure as much as it is, well, why am I, there's 14 teams in our league. Why am I the 11th highest paid coach if we're the second best team, or we're the fourth best team, or we're the best team. And that's where I think that all comes into effect. And it's a great reminder for me when I talk about it, just you can't ever put your security in what you have in the bank or what you have in the market. Now,
hey, it's Carl. This part of the conversation reminded me of a theme that seems to be emerging. And it's this idea of, I'm calling it comparison set. Like, what is your comparison set? And I've noticed, I remember, you know, Manit Chauhan's episode and Chip's episode and even Josh Brown, everybody sort of pre-internet, pre-social media. And if I go back to my own childhood, I didn't, there was no cell phones. And so my comparison set were my buddies I rode dirt bikes with, like little BMX bikes. And maybe I had a red line and I wanted a Mongoose or vice versa. I might have wanted a slightly better bike, but I didn't want a jet. You know what I mean? It wasn't in my comparison set. And I think this is a really important thing to think about. The impact of the community that you've built around you, the people you hang out with, and by extension, the people you follow and friend and like. I mean, think of all those words, right? Like follow, friend, like. Those people have become our comparison set, which I think is a real challenge. And so for me, and I know it's a huge challenge for me, I find myself increasingly depressed is not exactly the right word, but sad when I spend any time, even if it's under the guise of work. When I spend any time on social media, I find myself comparing. And I'm not doing it like I'm trying to keep up with the Joneses. It's much trickier than that, right? It's just this like slippery little thing that slips into your life where you're like, oh, that truck's nice. And if you think about comparison sets, I mean, imagine being an 18, 19, 20-year-old basketball player at a Division I school with all the attention like Baylor. That was what I was super curious about, listening to Coach Drew think about his answers related to money. You can see him almost answering some of these questions through the lens of his players, because you want to talk about pressure. You know what I mean? In terms of comparison set, like it's amped up to a level I think very few of us can understand, which is why I was so interested in Coach Drew's experience. It's interesting. Almost the outsourcing of identity, right? Like there's something really interesting I've been thinking about. I mean, I've been doing this for 25 years and having conversations about money and helping people make good decisions with money. And there's something about identity and money, right? That causes problems. I would imagine you see the news when mm-hmm. Coach Self signs a new contract. Yeah. You've just gotten to the point where you're like, look, that's not what's important to me? Or is it still like, hey, I pay attention to that? How do you deal with that?
Yeah, I the first and foremost, anytime a coach gets a contract like that, I'm happy for them because they deserve it. But I think that's important because some people look at it and they get real jealous. And that's not, to me, I think that's the wrong thing. So whatever the school thinks he's worth and deserves, very happy and pleased for him. At the yeah. same time, my job is not to be the highest grossing coach. My job is God's given me a chance to coach at a school and to raise young men. We call it preparing champions for life, spiritual, academic, yeah. character formation, and athletic. And that's what I do. And then coaches nowadays, we never used to have agents, but we all have agents now. I'll let him worry about that. But to me, it's good business too. I would never want to do anything that is not good business. And what I mean is, yeah. a coach benefit, but the school doesn't. I wouldn't want that. School benefit, but the coach, everybody has to benefit. And there comes pressure too with the more you make, the more you don't want to disappoint, the more you want to please, and the harder it is. I mean, with like name, image, and likeness, a lot of people thought, well, how are you going to be able to coach young players when they get money? And from my experience so far, the players that have capitalized with NIL have actually, it's aged and responsibility wise where they try to even be better in the community at school, because the analogy I give is if someone gives you a raise, Carl, you're not going to say, okay, I'm going to take the day off. You're probably going to go to work early the next day and show you're worth the raise because you appreciate the raise.
Yes, really interesting. I would imagine, you just seem very committed to what you're doing, and it's all about these principles. It's not about the noise outside. So I don't mean to press, but I'm really, really curious because you're in a unique position, but it translates to all of us. Like, how do you ignore the noise every year of, like, you know, new opportunity? You mentioned an agent.
Yeah.
You know, you've been at Baylor a long time now.
21 years.
Yeah. And it's clear that there's a lot of connection and care. And so how do you ignore annual contract distractions? What do you do to be like, it's not about that, it's about this other thing?
And being fully transparent, sometimes some of the coaches that have stayed a long time in places have made it not as good a job. Because what happens is the assistants are paid less, the facilities are paid less. So there's a tension always with that, because a head coach is only as good as his staff. And if your program, like, we're the winningest Power 5 program in the last 4 years.
That's amazing.
We're the only school to have 3 players in the top 16 draft in the last 3 drafts. Okay. So we've had some success.
Yeah.
And for us to continue to have success, we can't lose coaches because salaries, or are we understaffed or whatever. We can't lose recruits because of facilities. We have to stay relevant. You have to stay on top of things. And we're really blessed because we got a great athletic director who does a great job to make sure that he's always dialed in with what others have and make sure that we have what we need to be successful. But I just tell you, I know a lot of older coaches that once they got out, because I talked to them all, we're friends, like, you know, I was there for 20 years and I just stopped looking for jobs and I stopped, and they knew I was going. And what they did was they made our job worse. They didn't improve our facilities. They didn't improve our salary pool. So my assistants left. I didn't get as good as assistants. We didn't get as many good recruits because we didn't have an up-to-date practice gym or arena. So there's that tight line in that. So I bring that up to say the best schools know what's needed, because now you can keep your program going in the direction it needs to, the company in the direction it needs to, and not have to worry about the outside noise or need the outside noise.
Yeah, interesting. So do you have sort of a set of rituals or mantras or habits that you just, you know, when those outside distractions come up for you or the players, that you're like, look, we acknowledge that, but let's pull it back here? Do you have a way of doing that?
Yeah, that's a great question. It used to be everything happened after the season was over. And nowadays, it happens during the season, because some of them, it's, well, am I going to go pro? Am I not going to go pro? What am I going to do once this season's over with the transfer portal? Am I going to transfer? Is my role going to be? So I think in everything, you have to be proactive rather than reactive. And then the second thing is, if everyone's committed to the cause for the year, that helps you to see it through. And I think my point with that is, you bring people that want to be at Baylor, they want to represent Baylor, they want to win a championship for Baylor, they want to go to a Final Four for Baylor, then that can help keep the outside noise away till it's over.
We'll be right back with more from 50 Fires. Hey, it's Carl. You know what's hard for most of us? Talking money. That's what I'm talking about. Talking about money is hard for most of us, but there's somebody who it is not hard for. She's been doing it forever. Her name is Shauna Game. And if you've been enjoying the conversations I'm having here at 50 Fires, I think you would love what Shauna's got going on at her podcast. The podcast is called Everyone's Talking Money. And just like 50 Fires, Shauna's goal with Everyone's Talking Money is to go beyond the spreadsheets and the calculators and the budgeting apps to talk about how our emotional relationship with money impacts our lives. With over 900 episodes, that's right, 900, there is an episode for any and every practical money question you have. Some of Shauna's recent episodes include retirement risks to avoid and credit card versus debit card. Which one should I use? You're going to love it. Subscribe to Everyone's Talking Money on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Welcome back to 50 Fires. back to what you said, like we're relatively competitive in nature. We like to compare. And what we're ultimately, we're trying to compare is like happy, but there's no unit of measure for happy. So I can't say like I have four and you have seven.
Yeah.
So we somehow swapped. We decided to use money as a proxy. And what's interesting is we didn't really even use money. We used consumption. And we're sort of thinking that look, that person must be happy. And it's a giant problem, right? Because we don't even know. Clearly, consumption doesn't make us happy. So how have you thought about enough? Like, how would you define enough?
I know with our players, we'll talk about like 65% of the NBA players are bankrupt within 5 years of leaving the league. Mm. And why is that? Because they're making generational wealth, some of them. And then we'll use examples of this person made $200 million and they're bankrupt. This person, $250 million, bankrupt. Most people that never grew up with money, you get one shot at it, you know? And how can you be wise with it? And I think with our players, we tried to tell them, if you tied 10, save 10, you could spend the rest. If you're able to save more, just diversify who you save it with.
Yeah. What do you make of that? Like, why haven't we been able? It's not like that's a secret. Why haven't we been able to fix that problem?
Well, from what we've observed, and when I say we, like staff, and just pulling our wisdom together, a lot of times it's generational wealth, and unfortunately, you feel responsible. And when I say you, the athlete, just like if it's a CEO of a company, you probably have a lot of family members and people that might need money, want money, and you feel responsible, you want to help them out. So now it's, you're dividing your resources up. Yeah. And then the next thing is you're traveling with the team and everybody's got nice stuff. So you're trying to keep up with the Joneses. I remember my brother-in-law played with the 76ers, and he'll probably kill me for telling this story, but
this is the best kind of story.
Yeah. He just bought his first car in the NBA. And he's so proud of it. And he drives it up the tunnel. And like, so you got AI and all these Allen Iverson and other players coming up. And fans are going, oh, look at his car. Look at his car. And my brother-in-law drives up and they go, oh, it's a corny Avalon. And like, he was so excited about his first car purchase. And it was a good economical car. And then it gets booed, basically, you know. Right. And but that's where the comparison, a lot of you get in the NBA. And you think you're going to be there for 15 years. You think you're going to get more and more and more. And what's so hard in sports, especially, you make a lot of money, but you make it for a short period of time. You take professional doctors and lawyers and dentists and whatever, and they make more over 40 years. Because, and it's gradual and it keeps going up, where an athlete is at their pinnacle and their career is probably 3 or 4 years. And so now they're thinking their career is going to be 15 years. They think they're going to be making more. And all of a sudden now they make a lot less. Their spending is a certain level. Pat Riley used to tell this story. He says, you can be a king for a day or a prince for a lifetime. Wow. And so just spending within your means so that you can, okay, what will work for the next 50 years versus what works right now?
Yeah. I want to just return to enough. Like you personally, I'm assuming you're married.
Three kids.
Mm-hmm. You, your wife. Yeah. Did you say three? Mm-hmm. Is that right? Three. Yeah. You and your wife and your kids. Like how, if you were to sit down together, how would you define as a family? How would you define enough? I'm not talking about a dollar amount, but just what would it mean to have enough?
I think with them, what we've tried to do, and they're, one's a sophomore in college. One is a sophomore in high school. And then the youngest one's a sixth grader. And I think what we've tried to do is wherever God calls you, that's what you need to do. And it's not about the money. It's where God wants you to be. If it's a teacher, if it's a lawyer, if it's a doctor, if it's a coach, if it's a professional athlete, whatever it is. So I think it's not based on what job, what money, but more where's your calling, what talents and abilities has God given you. And because we all know at the end of the day, if you're doing what you're called to do, that's happiness. And that is, as you said, enough.
And how long again have you been in Waco?
So this is 21 years. So all three of our kids were born in Waco.
How much is having them grow up in a town like Waco? impacted their lives, I would imagine.
Well, it is a blessing. There's been stability. They've been able to be in one spot in the coaching profession. There's a lot of movement.
Yeah.
And that's definitely been something that's probably made it easier on them. But when things are going well and people talking well about Baylor basketball and me, I'm sure it's easier than when it's not going well, you know?
Right. Yeah. Conversations about money with your kids. How do you and your wife handle that? Have there been any conversations that you can remember that have been impactful?
Yeah, I think our kids are getting more and more to the age where we can have those conversations. And coaching profession's a little bit different because we're gone so much. Like, I'll be honest, I work all the time. I don't spend money. Like, it's nothing to do. I'm at work all the time. All right. If I'm at home, I'm at working. So there is no spending except for a family vacation. So I don't have some of those temptations to buy stuff because I don't have time to enjoy it.
Right.
And then as far as conversations with family, I think if coaches ever have regrets, it's probably we take care of our family at work so much that sometimes our family at home gets neglected. And right. People say, what is coaching? And you think it's an hour and a half practice of X and O's or 2.5 hours. What it is you got 13, 18 to 22 year olds. Now, thanks to COVID, 18 to 25 year olds or 24 year olds. And then you have 10 managers and GAs. So if anyone wants to know what coaching is, everybody that has one or two or three kids and say, this is a full-time job. All right, now take 25 of them. All right, and put them in a college campus and then you help raise them. So, I mean, like that is really what coaching is. And then in college, you're blessed because you have other responsibilities like with the school, boosters, whatever. And so my point is like the coaching part is actually not nearly as long as what people think it is.
The stuff that goes with it.
You know? So here's a question I have for you because you've asked some great questions. What advice would you give coaches? Because I'm probably similar to a lot of coaches that don't have a lot of time to give money talks at home. What would be your best advice for some family or parent or parents that haven't had those talks? How would you recommend best practices according to what you've heard or observed?
Oh, that's such a nice question. Hey, it's me again. I am so fascinated each time this happens. I don't know if you remember, but it happened. Chip Gaines did the same thing to me, had a question. Bryce Roberts, the very first episode of 50 Fires, had a question for me. It happens so frequently that I almost expect it. In fact, in the episode with Josh Brown, a similar thing came up. I asked him one question. It was, you know, what's your earliest memory of money? And it took him no more than 3 seconds to start sharing that experience. And then later in the episode, he says, I haven't talked about that for 35 years. So it's interesting. People who have been super successful quickly, like somebody like Coach Drew, I mean, come on, quickly within 25 minutes of a conversation have questions for me about money. And I don't think it's about me, to be clear here. I think people are just hungry to have these conversations. They're hungry to be asked. Josh Brown, when I asked him offline later on that story, I said, Josh, what do you make of the fact that you haven't talked about that in 35 years, but it was right there on the tip of your tongue when I asked? And he said, nobody's ever asked, right? And so what I make of this idea that Chip Gaines and Bryce Young and Manit Chauhan and Coach Drew ask me, hey, what should I do about this? Or how should I approach this? Or what have you seen? It just reminds me, and I want to just remind you, we need to have more conversations with money. People are hungry for somebody to create space for them where it feels safe. And it may take 20 minutes. It may take an hour. It may take 2 or 3 conversations for that experience to happen, but it happens reliably. We desperately want to talk about money and meaning. We've just never been given the chance. And so here's my answer to Coach Drew. What's fascinating to me is when have your eyes and ears open, the opportunity for these conversations is coming up all the time. And what I mean by that, I don't know if what you were taught, I mean, like I was literally taught growing up, like it was none of my business.
Uh-huh.
You know, and so I noticed when I was my son Sam was maybe he was like 9 or 10. We were driving out of our neighborhood and the neighbors had just gotten a new water ski boat. And Sam said, you know, I'll just use Smiths. That's not their last name. The Smiths must be rich. They got a new boat. And he was sitting in the back seat and I looked in the rearview mirror and I said, hey, Sam, that's none of our business. Mm. And I remember seeing his face, like really sort of this confused, like, what do you mean? And I luckily I caught myself and said, oh, I'm sorry. Like, tell, like, you know, there's a much easier question. Like, Sam, tell me why you think the Smiths might be rich, or why do you say that? Or tell me more, just somehow to engage in the conversation. And I think that's the way I would think about it. If I didn't have a lot of time, and as a parent, none of us have time, a lot of time, but when these things came up naturally, in fact, if I recall my conversation with Chip, he said the same thing. Like it wasn't that he said, it's not like we were sitting down intentionally. We're going to sit down and have a family meeting about money. It wasn't like that. It was more like, oh, it came up. I want a new pair of shoes. One of the kids says, okay, well, let's talk about that. How much does that cost? How many hours would you have to work? Like mm-hmm. really making it concrete. And so like blending it into normal life, because you know how well dads sit down on the couch conversations are remembered. In other words, a lecture.
Yeah.
So that's how I would just be on the lookout. I think learning how to talk about money is maybe one of the most important skills we're going to be able to give to our kids, because as you've pointed out, it relates to your identity. Jesus had more to say about money than any other single subject. Money and wealth, money, wealth, and possessions. More verses in the Bible about that than anything else. You know, it's kind of the crux of our existence. Yeah. Is like, how are we going to handle this comparison and envy and jealousy and
attention?
And man, you're right in the middle of it, especially with, you know, family and players too. It's so interesting. I'm curious how, if you've got any stories about how you've helped players see that king for a day, prince for a lifetime concept.
I think showing them the stats and figures.
Is that something you do regularly?
Yes. Yeah. So that, and then the other thing is, besides that part of it, at the end of the day, if you don't eat today, you're hungry. If you don't eat tomorrow, you're hungry. If you have a great meal today, you're still hungry tomorrow. And I think making sure that they're being fed what's really the most important stuff. And why I say that is I go back to being grateful for what they have. And then we play with a culture of joy, Jesus, others, yourself. So at the end of the day, if your priorities are right, then that helps keep you grounded and keeps you, the fruits of the Spirit, keep you where you need to be. And again, we're all human. We all have the same temptations. But I think focusing on we share with our guys all the time. Seeing them in heaven matters more than winning games.
Yeah. Well, Coach Drew, as we sort of wrap up, I'm curious if, did you say your youngest son's in sixth grade?
Sixth grade.
Sixth grade. So that makes him about how old?
12.
12. Let's just pretend 20 years from now, I'm still doing this show.
Uh-huh.
He's 32 and we have him on. And I ask him a similar question, you know, about his relationship with money. What would you hope you would hear from him about his relationship with money?
If I was a betting man, I could see him being a high school basketball coach and a teacher. And I would think he would say, I'm not wanting, and I'm happy with what God's given me, and I'm doing a job that I love to do. And if all our kids, again, I'm yet to hear them want to choose something just for the money and say, I don't like this, but I want to do that for the, they've never, and my wife deserves a lot of credit for that. And she came from a successful family, and to her credit, she never was enamored with money. Otherwise she'd have never married me.
Right. Well, that's amazing. Well, thank you. That was super fun.
Well, thank you very much. Those are great questions, and you got me thinking, and I'm going to have some more conversations with my kids because of it. So Thank you very much for doing this.
Yeah, well, if I can ever be helpful there, you know where to find us for sure. That conversation with Coach Drew had so much in it that I just wanted to talk about one relatively narrow point, and this idea of moments, like impact moments, these little stories or experiences that we can all look back on our lives and we can see somebody said just one little thing or shared one little story. And I found it interesting that Coach Drew immediately recalled this quote from the legendary coach, Pat Riley, where he said, "You can be a king for a day or a prince for a lifetime." And I found myself reflecting on little moments. Sometimes they could just be a little moment with my daughter or that experience I shared in this episode with my son commenting on the neighbor's water ski boat. It could be something that you do much more methodically, like these conversations it sounds like Coach Drew has with the players, sits them down, shows them the stats about money. But the point is being on the lookout, being aware and being on the lookout for these little opportunities to, instead of saying, we don't talk about that, you know, money, politics, sex, religion, we don't talk about that in black company. Instead of saying that, saying something simple like, tell me more, or why is that important to you? I often think of this, like, tell me more as an opportunity to open a door instead of shut it. And it also, using tell me more, gives you a chance to get some ground underneath your feet, right? If a spouse, a partner, a friend, a child says something to you about money and you don't know what to do because you've never been taught. Nobody taught me. We're clumsy when it comes to having conversations with money. I feel clumsy in these, every episode, I feel clumsy. You can sometimes feel me kind of stumbling around for the question. And my point is, feeling clumsy about conversations around money is something you should expect because you've never done it. And so using this little trick, if you will, of just opening the door, like, tell me more about that. Why is that important to you? What do you think that means? Some opening instead of closing. Maybe, just maybe, we have a shot if we're on the lookout. We're aware. The idea of sitting down and having a financial talk or a lecture, that may work for some people. But I love this idea of just being on the lookout, right? Being aware and then leaning into the conversation instead of closing it down. So here's a question for you. When's the last time you had a conversation with somebody you love about money? How did it start? Are there ways, looking back on it now, that you could open the conversation instead of close it, even if it felt clumsy or, to be honest, sometimes threatening? And here's the challenge. How about this week? Right, this week, be on the lookout. If something comes up about money, look for an opportunity to open the conversation instead of close it. I know I will be. And next week, we'll be back together for another conversation about money and meaning at 50 Fires. 50 Fires is a production of Blind Nil Audio in association with The Roost. If you find this show valuable, and I sure hope you do, please share it with a friend and leave a 6 or 7 or maybe even 8-star review over on Apple Podcasts. It's crazy how much that helps the show get introduced to more people. Speaking of more people, I have a goal that we can use 50 Fires as a spark to start 1 million conversations a month about money. I've heard from so many of you about the conversations you're having around the dinner table, on a road trip in the car, or at your favorite coffee shop, and I think we need more. So if you've got a friend or a family member that you think would benefit from having a conversation about money, or if you happen to give advice for a living, we've created a whole set of free resources. Think of it as a book club about money. It's over at 50fires.com and you can use it every week. We're updating it every week so that you can help me start 1 million conversations a month about money. I'm looking forward to our next conversation around the fire. Cheers, my friends.
The views, information, or opinions expressed in the series are solely those of the individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of Chip and Joanna Gaines, Blind Nell Audio, nor Magnolia.